Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where, as you plan out your Cyber Black Friday shopping this holiday season, looking for the best deals, you'll be hard-pressed to find anyone better than one Robert Alistair Palinka and his shrewd coupon-clipping ways when it comes to nabbing the best bargain steals. And holy shit, man of stealing has he been since the start of free agency last Friday. And if anyone's been watching Queen's Gambit on Netflix, Palinka's been pulling a Beth Harmon and laying absolute waste to everyone in his path by just using a bunch of pawns. And with that, I can definitively say that this has been the best Lakers free agency offseason stretch coming right off a championship that this franchise has probably ever had. I mean, we got Trez Harrell, and he's not even the best Trez on the team. Tommy, Trez Tinkle. Did you ever, in your wildest dreams, think we could nab a guy like this?
Never thought we would have a Montanian. Is that what you call someone from Montana?
Yes, Montanian.
Montanian, like Mr. Tinkle, and I feel very privileged that he's on our team.
Alan, what about you? Does he bring a tinkle to your eye?
Oh, it's a tinkle to more than just my eye, I can tell you that. I'll just leave it there, sir.
And a tinkle this Lakers team has brought to more than just our eye. My God, it is lit, fellas. It is lit. Welcome to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Alan Riley and Tommy Alexander. Alan, did you ever think that we could have the feeling of winning two championships in the span of 1 month? And I never thought that free agency could make me feel this way, and obviously don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but it sort of feels like we won another championship, or at least we won the title for free agency.
Yeah, it kind of feels like when the Lakers and the Dodgers won championships within like 16 days of each other. So
right.
I'm starting to get really, really comfortable with this winning thing and the fact that the season starts in about a month from now. Let's just keep this thing rolling.
Yeah. Tommy, are you? Obviously, you're still riding that high, but I know we always say this in terms of like, we've never experienced or felt anything like this before. But this time, I feel like we truly mean it.
Yeah, the last time I remember being this shocked by what happened in free agency, I think we were in high school and we signed Gary Payton and Karl Malone. That was like the last time where I was like, I did not see that coming. Usually there's some preview or like, you know, obviously we had all those years where we had like $1 billion of cap space, right? And we never did anything as exciting as we all kind of hoped. But this year has just been the wildest by far.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. The Karl Malone, Gary Payton year, and that was off of a championship loss. This is off of a championship win, which is even more remarkable, and obviously we'll get into it. So obviously we've had to make some swift goodbyes to some key lovable figures from last year's time as we bid adieu, and a huge thank you to Quinn Cook, Rajon Rondo, Avery Bradley, JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard. Welcome back, then just kidding, kind of Dwight Howard. and in their stead, we have upgraded each guy in the most brazen way possible, most obnoxious and arrogant way possible, with Dennis Schroeder, Wesley Matthews,
disrespect.
Exactly, Montrezl Harrell, and Mark freaking Gasol. And now the Lakers have the sixth man of the year, the reigning Sixth Man of the Year in Trez and the runner-up for Sixth Man of the Year in Dennis Schroeder on the same team, as well as perennial first-team defender, NBA champion, and brother of Laker legend Pau Gasol, all on the same team. Yeah, I mean, quickly before we get into the meat of this, Alan, you know, usually with this much turnover, typically it can be seen as a worrisome thing. But in the Lakers' case, it's kind of like a turn-up turnover, with that turn-up being quite evident amidst the identity of this team sort of changing quite a bit, whether we're talking stylistically or chemistry-wise. But how do you feel about that? And also, first, what do you think I titled this episode?
You put me on the spot like that. I'm going to guess it has nothing to do with Tinkle, so we can get that one out of the way.
You're right.
I don't know. I'm going to have to come back to that one. But to answer the first question, you know, chemistry was a big question for this last team at the beginning of the season, too. It was pretty much a brand new team from the year before. And the year before, I mean, LeBron was injured and Rondo was injured. And, you know, Kuz was pretty much the only one with, like, KCP from two seasons ago, which now feels like five. So you never want to take for granted and just assume, well, because it worked out with this championship team chemistry-wise, this upcoming team that's looking to repeat will probably be fine chemistry-wise. We don't know that. But, I mean, if we're just going to go based on past behavior and how everything played out, it's the same coaching staff, it's the same leadership, right, with the team, with the exception of Rondo, I would say, as far as leaders go. So I'm not concerned at all. If you want to search for a reason to be worried, I suppose that's something. But my bet is that we'll be all right. And I still don't have an answer for the title of this episode.
That's okay. So I was talking about the turnover, all of these new faces coming in. We've got Montrezl Harrell. So I'm going to title this episode, Trez Passers Welcome.
Nice. I like that. Solid.
Trez Passers Welcome. All right. So tonight's episode, we're getting into all of the Lakers' newest acquisitions individually and talking about what an unfathomably remarkable job Pelinka did on the fly to not only restock for next year, but also leave room for a sustainable foundation for the future of this team as well. We'll get into more deeply analyzing this Lakers team as a whole and how we envision everyone clicking in conjunction in another episode. But for now, we'll kind of try and more focus on each acquisition independently. But before we get to all that, as usual, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. If you have any questions or topics regarding free agency and this new Lakers team that you want to throw our way, that you want us to address, please leave it in the comment section of your review and we'll make sure to bring it up in a future episode. Take these giddy free agency vibes of yours and let it flow through your thumbs by giving us a 5-star rating, because the more you rate and review us, that's how many more times Marc Gasol will have his two palms open and his two shoulders shrugged up, facing the sky after every foul call he disagrees with, mimicking exactly what Pau Gasol used to do when he was a Laker whenever he wanted to dispute a call. So if you'd like to see more of those Mark Pau mirrored mannerisms throughout the season, please rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. Lastly, if you'd like to support us in any small way financially, please go to patreon.com/TheLakersLegacyPodcast and you can donate as little as a buck and also get some exclusive content on the way as well. All right, let's get into this. Let's start general first with regards to what an amazing bang-out job Pelinka did. Again, it's unfathomable. This was truly a one-of-a-kind offseason, and we're just going to laud over what Pelinka did and give an account of how we were feeling as things unraveled and how this compares maybe to past free agencies. So obviously, we started off with a bang, trading for Dennis Schroeder, honestly the first sort of transaction in the NBA at all. We only gave up the number 28th pick and Danny Green for someone younger at a greater position of need, given also what we knew about how much Rondo might command. So Pelinka set us up in a very favorable position even before free agency started with that move. Then, right as free agency started, we nabbed Wes Matthews for the biannual exception. Then, shortly after that, they got Trez Harrell to sign the MLE, in spite of the fact that Trez had a larger offer from our good old friend Mitch Kupchak in Charlotte. Pelinka was able to trade JaVale McGee to the Cavs for a 2026 second rounder and somehow also got Jordan Bell and Alphonso McKinney. McKinney is going to stay on this team as an extra wing guy for us. And then they signed Marc Gasol to the vet minimum. And then today they re-signed Markieff Morris to the vet minimum. I think for me, you know, Rob Pelinka went into attack mode here. He wasn't complacent. He was aggressive. He attacked this offseason as if we had lost the championship. He went in for the jugular and finagled his way into some of the slickest maneuverings I've ever seen a GM make. Obviously, having LeBron James and AD and clutch helped tremendously, but I think the way he was able to work the cap gymnastics and the timing of operations and all the logistical things involved with freeing up space to be hard capped was, to me, truly some next level stuff. So, Tommy, what are your thoughts overall about, you know, one after another? It seemed like plot twist upon plot twist, and the story just kept getting better, which usually isn't the case, especially if you go back to 1201 Mozgov calls. You know, it just gets progressively worse, but this was the exact opposite. So talk to me about the job Rob Pelinka did and just, I guess, how you felt as things were unraveling.
So going into the offseason, I guess we kind of predicted, I mean, we had a very various predictions, obviously, like everybody does, right? But I think, you know, we kind of thought like, okay, maybe there's a chance they shake things up, but I think for the most part, guys are going to be back. And I think, you know, over the course of the weeks leading into free agency, especially when the, you know, after the season start date was announced and all the, you know, relevant deadlines were announced, there's a massive speculation. I mean, you can go on Twitter and find any, you know, support for, like, somebody guessed that something was going to happen, you know, for every team. And like one of those things happened. It's just like so rampant speculation. And so we kind of thought that we went over pretty much every possibility. And it turns out that we in fact did not go over every possibility, because Rob Pelinka just, I mean, he came up with stuff that people did not even fathom would be possible. Like, he was literally making moves that, you know, cap experts like Pincus and Bobby Marks are on Twitter like, I don't really understand how this happened, so there must be more detail. And then like 10 minutes later, it's like, oh, he must have used this weird like cap nuance, you know, to save like an extra 100,000 by doing this and X, Y, and Z. And it's just like he was so creative in the moves that he was able to make. Like, for example, trading JaVale, right? I guess I'll go in order of, like, you know, watching things unfold. You mentioned the Schroeder thing. We obviously watched the draft, you and all of us, and we did, you know, we recorded after the draft, and it was, I don't know if it was a letdown, but we didn't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know necessarily to expect whether that would kind of set the tone for how things were going to go in free agency. And I sort of thought that, you know, Rob's got everything lined up. He's going to sign KCP. He probably knows who he's going to use or sign with the MLE. And I bet you, like, this is all just going to be announced, like, right at, you know, 6 p.m. or, sorry, 3 p.m. Pacific when the free agency opens. And free agency opens, and we're, like, kind of waiting and waiting. And then, like, guys are coming off the board, and we're kind of waiting and waiting. And when the Montrezl Harrell thing happened, dude, I just, like, I fell on the floor. I just, like, nobody in the world predicted that this was going to happen, you know? And it just kept going and going, and slowly you started to see his vision of the team, right? It's like, yeah, certain guys were, we obviously lost Danny before free agency started. You know, certain guys that were part of our team, it sort of seemed like they were starting to move away. Like, oh, you know, talks are high on Rondo. AB is opting out, you know, like other pieces started moving away. And it's like, well, what are we going to do? Right. And Montrez was just sort of like such a shock. And I was like, I can't see how this gets crazier from here. And it just kept getting crazier. You know what I mean? Like Marc Gasol took an insane amount of cap creativity. I mean, Wes Matthews, who I accidentally skipped over, he was actually, I think, our first announcement.
He was the most predictable announcement, right? So when we got him, we're like, all right, so things are falling into place. And then exactly, it seemed like it was going to get predictable when Dwight Howard, for literally a hot second, was like, I'm back. All right, we're running it back. And then he's like, just kidding, delete that ish. And then I think that's when the madness started, right? Because right after he deleted that, then news of Marc Gasol came about. And we were like, oh, I thought this guy was going to Spain, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that the Lakers were even on his radar and vice versa, I guess we should have known that if there was any place that he would eschew Spain for, going back home for, it would be LA to be with his brother, right? But
right.
He obviously caught us off guard. And then right after the Gasol thing, the rumors, the Trez thing happened, and I think all of us were just in a state of shock. And I just,
yeah.
I came up with this analogy on the spot, guys. Have you ever seen those genius artistic dudes who like make paintings in the sand or whatever, and you have no idea what the hell this dude is doing until they like reverse spin it or whatever, or flip it vertically, and then they show everybody, they pan out, and everybody's like, oh, that's what it feels like Rob Pelinka has done, this fucking genius artistic man. But Tommy, did you want to say anything else?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, we all kind of thought we were going to get a big man. And I think, you know, the rumor that was floating around was Ibaka. So we all kind of thought maybe it's going to be Ibaka. Montrezl Harrell was not supposed to be anywhere remotely in our price range. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we stole him away from the Clippers made it that much more sweet. I'm going to just have to be honest. It really like heightens it for me that we took him away from the Clippers, because not only, you know, do we get a very, very valuable piece for our roster at the price, but we took away like the only asset that the Clippers have left for like the next, I don't know how many years that they traded like their picks for Paul George. Right. So it's just like everything has been like, everything has been almost, it feels almost too good to be true. Yes. Like when we signed Montrez, it's like, well, there's no way we're going to get Mark. And then we get Mark. And then it's like, well, there's no way we're going to get Markieff. And then we get Markieff. And it's like, we have 10 legitimate NBA players who would be, like, how many other teams in the league have 10 rotation players who 100% of those 10 guys would be rotation players on all other 29 teams in the NBA? It's like, I don't know that this has ever happened. Usually there's like one or two guys where it's like, ah, you know, they make it work with that guy. But
yeah.
We are so stacked right now. And the fact that we were able to do this while using the MLE, while like having minimal, you know, assets to work with, really, while being hard capped, like it's just mind blowing.
Well, that's why I made that Queen's Gambit analogy of Rob Pelinka killing you with just his pawns. By the way, have you guys been watching Queen's Gambit?
I have not seen it.
Dude, sorry. You guys have to start it. It's so good. Anybody listening to this podcast, it's legit binge mode type stuff. Like once you start, and there's only like 7 episodes. It's a limited series. There's no season 2, but it's probably one of the best shows out there besides The Boys season 2. So check out Queen's Gambit. But with that said, Alan, your thoughts on what Pelinka has done here and just the snowball of litty goodness that came about. And this offseason for the Lakers is an offseason that's being universally praised by even their worst pundits and critics and cynics. You know, the best they could say at the start was, yeah, I don't know, I think I'd still like Danny Green over Dennis Schroeder on a championship team. But that's without knowing exactly what was to come, the domino effect of dominion and domination that Rob Pelinka had planned. So yeah, your thoughts.
Yeah, this is like, what have you done for me lately kind of approach as far as Rob is concerned, you know? And I mean, he said it. He said the easiest thing to do and the most dangerous thing to do is to get complacent and to just get comfortable. And I think when you think of Kobe, right, like at the end of any kind of championship, I mean, he's right back in the gym and he's already thinking ahead and considering what other organizations are going to do, because everyone's coming at our heads now, right? If there wasn't a target on our back before, I mean, now there really is, right? So if you don't make significant, I don't want to say changes necessarily, but like upgrades, right? You're already losing. So yeah, to see that play out is just freaking incredible. It says so much about our organization's culture, which is so sweet to just be able to say that definitively, because, you know, you have people who talk about the teams who have great cultures, right? The Spurs, the Heat, the Patriots, etc. And like the Lake, we've been left out for quite some time now, right? And we've totally re-entered, I would say, that conversation. We have to be mentioned. And as far as like just where I was at when all this was going down, so I was working like all day Saturday in a position where I could not check any social media at all. Like I was interacting with human beings, right, for like 8 hours on Saturday. Yeah, dudes, I missed out on like all of the live as it's happening kind of thing. So I had to catch up on like whatever it was, 12 hours of Twitter, basically. So that was my Saturday night. I was just like scrolling through our group chat and just on Twitter catching up on everything. So it really came in a whirlwind for me. I didn't get any notifications on my phone even. Like, you know, there's just nothing. I was like separated from the world.
You just got pummeled with a whole bunch of punches that you couldn't...
It was insane, dude. It was too fast. Like, I enjoyed it, you know? But, like, I couldn't even let it breathe, right?
You couldn't process, right?
No, not at all. Trust the process. Trust the process.
So, you know, what Rob Pelinka did this offseason, and we've had hints of this throughout his tenure with the Lakers, right? Given the fact that this past season was the only trade deadline where he didn't make a trade, and in lieu of that, he made the biggest buyout signing that he's ever had with Markieff Morris, right? So that was what he did instead of a trade. But prior to that, he's always made some sort of move at the trade deadline. So we've seen hints of the way that literally Rob Pelinka likes to Rubik's Cube the future. This offseason felt like he was absolutely in his bag, as the kids like to say. He unloaded the freaking clip. Pop, 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 magnitude.
Yes.
And oh my God, I think in the span of his first 3 years as a Laker GM or basketball, head of basketball operations, whatever, it's like he took all of his previous moves, one-upped them, and decided to, you know, combine them all and consolidate them all into one three-day span. So, I mean, and props again to bringing back KCP on a reasonable deal. We find out now that it's only for $12 million, which gives us more space under the hard apron to sign a 15th guy if we want to, or just keep that space open for a potential buyout guy in the future. And then I think KCP's third year is unguaranteed. Just such a favorable contract. And also, the other thing I'll say about KCP is we're getting him in his prime years, ages 27 through 30. Markieff Morris is only 31, and he just came off a playoff run in which he led the team in three-point shooting, 42% from three. We're going to have his early bird rights next year where we can keep him long-term if we so choose, and just such shrewd, smart negotiating by Pelinka all around. So it was important to keep the continuity with bringing KCP and Keith back. And yeah, not enough can be said about Rob Pelinka and what he did here. We'll take it to break, and when we return, we'll get into the nitty-gritty of all these new guys. And yeah, just keep getting excited and lit. So
keep popping.
Keep popping.
How many people do you think know that reference, dude?
Hey, if you guys are community fans, let us know so we're not feeling alone here. All right, so we're back. We're going to go in order here. Let's start with Wesley Matthews, who, if you actually sift away through the madness, probably one of our most important acquisitions, because even still up until this point, we don't have a lot in the name of wing defense, and we needed very badly a Danny Green replacement. So obviously when the Green and Schroeder deal happened, he was a guy who was rumored to have drawn interest from the Lakers. That ended up coming to pass. We signed him to the BAE, which is about $3.5 million, and he immediately slots into the hole Danny Green left. Yeah, Tommy, what are your thoughts on Wesley Matthews at this price? I think pretty much one-fifth of the price of Danny Green.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's an upgrade, actually. I don't think it's like, oh, we for the price, it's, you know, it, you make it work. I think he's actually in many ways an upgrade. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you follow some of the guys on Twitter who get into like the real analytics of defensive matchups and, you know, individual defense analytics are famously not that accurate or not that helpful, I guess. But Wes Matthews, you know, in terms of difficulty, in terms of what he was doing defending for the Bucks last year, he was consistently taking the best perimeter player on the other team, the best wing player on the other team, and shutting them down. And he did that over an entire season. His three-point shooting has taken like a little bit of a dip. He's still a threat. And we'll see, I mean, how much he benefits from, you know, getting hopefully a lot of wide open corner threes, above the break threes, mm-hmm. not that great. But, you know, Danny Green wasn't that great either. So I think for the price, it's an amazing move. Somehow, although we get a little bit older than Danny, we get a little bit faster. I mean, Danny, you know, famous T-Rex running in the bubble, like it just became a little hard to watch at times. I know he was injured, he was struggling, but, you know, he's... on a quick turnaround, is there any indication that he would have, you know, flipped it and gotten in great shape and gotten healthy? And I guess I shouldn't say shape. He's in fine shape, but, you know, gotten healthy to the point where he could clean all that stuff up, you know, in 3 weeks. I don't think so, you know? So Wes has been, had more time off. He's a solid player, great length. He can guard twos and threes. He can guard quicker guys than Danny. We lose a little bit of height, but I don't know that it matters with Wes. I mean, he has such a strong base. I mean, if I think at this point, this stuff has gone pretty viral, but there are these clips of Wes guarding Kawhi last year.
Yes, sir.
And his ability to fight over screens is like absolutely insane. I mean, it's like quite jarring actually when you watch it, because I think that we had pretty good defenders last year, especially Caruso and KCP. And Wes Matthews gets over these screens like they're not even there. It's like so crazy, and like is able to get himself in a really good position. And I, you know, we, like you said, we needed somebody to replace Danny. I think of the wings, he was probably the best option, certainly for the price, for what this team needed, in terms of being able to provide that, that type of defense and being able to hit a shot. And really, we're not going to be asking him to do much else. So, you know, obviously fantastic signing in my my opinion.
Yeah, not to hit Danny Green with the door on his way out, but someone replied to me on Twitter, I think at Herschel _, he wrote, yeah, Danny always looked like he did a heavy leg workout the day of the game.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like you had leg day the day before. He was doing that like weird run where you can't really stretch your legs.
So I guess the best way to describe Wesley Matthews for me actually would be he's like a fusion of Danny Green plus Avery Bradley, you know, because he's a little bit shorter, but he has like the physicality and strength that Avery Bradley had. But his body is, I guess, a little bit of Dion Waiters too. He's very bulky. He's got some spare change in that back pocket where if you watch those clips against Kawhi Leonard, Kawhi Leonard's trying to do his back down move on him in the mid range, and he's not gaining any, you know, separation, and he just has to shoot over Wes. But because Kawhi, even though Wes is shorter than even KCP, because Kawhi felt that physicality to start off his move, his shot is kind of left for dead a little bit, or DOA upon once he shoots it, or he at least makes it more difficult for Kawhi to get that shot off upon release, even if it's above his head. So, Alan, what are your thoughts on Wesley Matthews, who, that I know it's just one game, but during that December matchup against Kawhi, held him to 5 of 14 shooting and really leveraged that hefty body and strength of his against Kawhi?
Yeah. I mean, I was actually thinking about the game when we played in Milwaukee the first time around. I think, I want to say LeBron might have had a triple-double, like 21, 11, and 11, but 21, right? And I can't remember his exact shooting percentage from that game, but I was watching some highlights of it again, and Wesley Matthews played LeBron extremely well defensively. He came up with a key steal when we were making our comeback at the end. LeBron tried to cross him over. It might have just really gotten deflected off of LeBron's own shin, but Wes Matthews still stayed right in front of him. He is incredibly sturdy. I really like your fusion of Danny Green, Avery Bradley, but for sure plus Dion Waiters, because he's not like chunky, like, you know, that makes you kind of think of like Glenn Davis or something, like a fat guy, but he's very like stout. And like Danny Green used his height and his length, right, to defend people, and obviously his IQ as well. But I think that Wes Matthews is such a huge defensive asset to us. So that's really exciting. And then offensively, I was listening to Pete and Darius and Trudell, and I think Trudell said that his lowest 3-point percentage in any season in his career was like 36%. Yeah, that's freaking crazy.
It is.
So I see him as definitely being like a trail three type of guy, being that wing who needs to be back in transition defense just in case, but he could definitely knock that shot down. And despite his Achilles tear, you know, several years ago, he's figured out a way to be extremely effective.
Yeah, for sure. And his defense, surprisingly, with his body, is still very gritty and nasty. He really gets after it. You know, he's really a tough guy, but like Tommy said, he moves extremely well. Like, he moves like Avery Bradley, really, which is crazy, fighting over screens and whatnot. And then his shooting his shot to me has always been super pure. Like, he's a stellar baseline three-point shooter, and that shot comes off his fingertips with ease and has beautiful arc. I'm most confident in him knocking down threes than anyone on this team from last year and this year. And that includes KCP. He shot 36.4% from three in the regular season, hitting 1.6 a game, but he did hit 39% from three in the postseason, hitting 1.7 a game. And the one thing that I want to add is that last year is probably the first year where he had a superstar like Giannis take up most of the attention. And granted, he was mediocre. I guess he's also had Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum in the past, but this year he's going to have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and I don't think he's had, you know, gravity forces like those two ever before. Again, last year with Giannis was probably the closest extent. Now he has two of those guys, and then you add on top of that just the added scoring punch that we have in Dennis Schroeder, who's going to cut defenses up and drive it into the lane, and he's going to be the most wide open he ever has. Granted, asterisk, asterisk, Lakers three-point curse, let's put that all on there. But if we can even just get the 36%, his worst shooting year, that'll be great for us. Okay, let's move on to the second signing that caught all of us off guard, was the biggest shocker of them all, one that no one could foresee coming. The Lakers signing reigning Sixth Man of the Year, Trez, with the full non-tax MLE almost immediately after Dwight signed with the Sixers. What almost simultaneously accompanied this signing were the rumors that the Lakers and Marc Gasol were mutually interested in each other. But this move in a vacuum, when it first happened, seemed to make the entire league stop. And for me, and I'll start with you, Tommy, first, but I actually didn't know how to react, positive or negative. I was just like, my mind was so blown that I needed like 10 minutes to be like, wait, first, how did this happen? Second, is this good or bad? Because, you know, we all wanted Ibaka. He seemed to be the better fit. And with Trez, you're just like, he wasn't in my radar, first of all. And then second of all, I had not taken into account us bringing in a guy like him who doesn't necessarily space the floor for us. Defensively, you saw him struggle with the Clippers. But, you know, looking at the asset and just the price you got him at, you're just like, well, Pelinka has to seize the moment. So you like that part about it. And then you're also like, but he was just a Clipper. I've been hating this guy the entire year. But as I took a step back and just realized that this was just such a tremendous deal and you're tapping into some upside with this guy only being 26, that I don't think Pelinka could pass up. And slowly, and then once those, you know, tweets came in from Clippers players being like, what the F, you know, that made it all worth it for me. But yeah, Tommy, what are your thoughts on Trez and just trying to process it all, whether it was good, bad, et cetera?
Yeah, I think shock, right? When I saw it, I was like, my first reaction was, this is a typo. You know, Los Angeles, and then he accidentally typed, it was, I think Shams was the one I saw, and I was like, he must have just typed the wrong name by accident because he had like another tweet queued up for the Lakers or something. And if, you know, this year, of course, because everyone's in such a rush to be first, there were several mistakes and deletions and et cetera. So I was like, this is a mistake. But then more and more people started confirming it, and I was like, what the hell is happening? You know, and so I think for me, I totally hear where you're coming from. And I think I kind of had a very similar initial reaction where I'm like, okay, what? Because you like you said, like, it's not like Ibaka. You can see how he obviously fits. I mean, Ibaka fits on pretty much any team in the NBA who's trying to play like normal 2020 basketball, right? But Trez requires like a certain system almost. And, you know, it just didn't really make sense at first. But I think it's so funny because, like I was saying earlier, right, there's 3 weeks of speculation leading, or multiple weeks, I don't know if it's three, of speculation leading into free agency. It feels like we've kind of gone through every single option, deeply researched and analyzed how they might fit, looked at all their stats and advanced stats. And Montrez was not one of those guys, right? Our last memory of him was just completely blowing it in the bubble, right? And there were extraneous circumstances that were probably a huge, huge factor for that. But that's our last memory. And so once you kind of sift, like put all that away, though, and really dig in, it just like it became really apparent what they were kind of looking for here, right? It's, we came off a championship. We had a kind of an aging roster. You see the ages of the guys who left. Danny Green, I don't know his age, but he's, you know, getting up there. Rondo and Howard are both in their mid-30s. we had some older guys on the team. J.R. Smith, obviously mid-30s. We had several older guys on the team. And so you kind of think, like, well, actually, in hindsight, did the bubble help the Lakers last year? What did the fact that we had a three-month gap in the middle of the season where LeBron could just recharge after carrying us for months, right, to the number one seed in the West, did that help us? And how much, on the other hand, does it hurt us to have a only, you know, month and a half, two-month turnaround into the next season where the rest of the league got, like, a full normal break? Montrezl, and then you start to understand the logic a little bit more. Montrezl gives you this younger guy who has an endless motor. I mean, I don't care. He could have ended the season yesterday and he'd be ready to go for a new season tomorrow, right? Endless motor, you know, new energy. And you start to, you know, combine that with the Schroeder move and you're like, oh, wow, they really, really are concerned about, we need to, we already know now because we've seen it happen, what LeBron and AD will do once we get them to the playoffs in a favorable position as, like, you know, preferably, obviously the bubble didn't really matter for, you know, seeding, but especially as a one seed, when the home games and all that stuff comes back, we've seen what AD and LeBron can do. Now the question is, how are we going to get them there without, you know, you can't plan for a break. So probably there's not going to be a break this year. So how do we get them there rested and put them in a position to do it again? And I think you start to see why the Harrell thing makes sense. I think Harrell is going to surprise a lot of guys. Like, we need to keep in mind, right, there's a lot of hindsight bias that occurs when a team wins a championship. Like, for most of the season, and frankly, before the season, like, we were all kind of cautiously optimistic about how things could go. There were a lot of people who had some serious doubts, right? And they were not necessarily unjustified. Of course, you're going to get the trolls who are like, the Lakers are going to be a bottom four seed, right? We kind of thought, like, okay, they're probably going to be better than that. But nobody thought that they were going to be as good as they were, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I guess all of this is a long way of saying it's a crazy shock at first. But when you start to really think about how Harrell fits, I think it becomes more and more obvious why we went after him, what he can bring to this team, and some of the issues that I think he had with the Clippers that, you know, caused him to not maybe find the market that he was hoping for this summer. I think we're going to see this year that those aren't as big a weaknesses as we think, or as a lot of people think. And I think Harrell is going to come out. There's a reason this dude was looking for like a $15 to $20 million annual contract, right? Like, he's very, very talented. And I think he's going to come out and show exactly that. And of course, taking him away from the Clippers is just extra icing on the cake because, like I said, I mean, Paul George and all these guys, they're so transparent, right? There was all this stuff about Paul George, like, I mean, I can't remember who wrote this article. Maybe you guys remember, but at the end of the season, there was some article, end of the Clippers season, there's some articles about the Clippers implosion and, you know, reports from the locker room. This might've been leaked by Trez, actually, reports from the locker room about, you know, Paul George telling everybody, you know, we got to stick with it. Everybody needs to come back and we're going to go at it again. And Trez, like, rolled his eyes, right? Because Paul George is so transparent. The reason, like, the only reason he wanted Trez to come back is because it's a tradable asset for this team. He obviously is not a fit on this team, you know? So it just, like, you know, Trez clearly saw that and wanted to get out. He clearly wasn't happy with the Charlotte offer that, you know, they were giving. And he has a lot to prove because although he had a phenomenal, I mean, when you look at his numbers from last year, even defensively, right? He had a phenomenal year, but unfortunately the recency bias of how he looked in the bubble, I think greatly, greatly affected his market. And he's going to come out with a lot to prove. It's a contract year for him. And I can't be more excited about this signing.
Totally agree. To put into context his struggles in the playoffs, obviously he only like averaged like 10 points, like 2 rebounds, which is ridiculous. Obviously he got eaten up on defense playing drop coverage, which wasn't a place that he probably should have been put in. And also he was played at center for pretty much all of his minutes last year. I don't know if that's the smartest thing to do. On top of that, you know, I think his grandmother died, right? I forget whether or not he actually had COVID. I just know that he went to the bubble late. And so, yeah, I just think he's going to be utilized much better under Vogel and around LeBron James and Anthony Davis. If you look at what LeBron did with a guy like Tristan Thompson, who is probably, 70% of who Montrez is,
Offensively less
for sure. I mean, your mind goes like different wild places knowing that this guy on his own has seasons, multiple seasons of averaging 18 points and 7 rebounds, you know? And we're just a season removed from him averaging 18 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, shooting 73% versus the Warriors, you know? So Montrezl Harrell, he's a 6'8 guy with a 7'4 wingspan with an incredible motor. His handles and his ability to break big men off the dribble is incredible. He's incredibly agile, mobile, and such a great finisher with great touch in the paint. As a roll man off pick and rolls, he is absolutely devastating, and the assault he puts on the rim is unfair and nasty. Also, he's a fairly good passer, making fundamentally sound reads on the move. You know, I mentioned he averages almost like 2 assists a game for multiple seasons. So my comp for Trez is... he reminds me of Julius Randle if Randle had 4 inches added on to his wingspan and played with more of Larry Nance Jr.'s mentality in terms of just staying in his lane and being a relentless utility cleanup guy versus being the man. So obviously his ability to break man off the dribble is very reminiscent of Randle, and they also have the same motor. But when it comes to actually finishing, because he has that 7'4 wingspan, it's no contest, dude. This guy is like a 60% career shooter from around the basket. And I think just his infusion of athleticism, strength, and bulldog mentality is so welcome on this team, especially in Dwight's absence, right? So it's almost like you don't miss anything from that respect. And also there's the Phil Handy angle. I mean, can you imagine Phil Handy working with this guy? Alan, add your thoughts on Montrezl Harrell.
Honestly, you guys kind of said it all.
Sorry. Say it again.
No. All of you. You all said it all. Not just
say it again.
Dude, the way he wants to rip the rim off the backboard every single freaking time he dunks. Like, who else did that besides, like, Shaq? I'm sure, like, right. You know, there are plenty that I can't think of off the top of my head, but he makes a concerted effort to put an exclamation mark every single time he yams it on somebody. And
yams for Thanksgiving.
That's one of those, like, it's not an intangible thing. It's like almost the definition of tangible, right? In terms of energy and all that kind of stuff. And like, he's an energy guy who is extremely skilled. So when you package that together, yeah, it's so freaking exciting. I guess to kind of circle back to what my initial reaction was, yes, totally shocked. And then I think my second thought, just because of like the competitive nature and the vitriol for the Clippers, was, you know, screw the Clippers. Like, I was so happy just on that front alone. And then, yeah, to think about the basketball impact, of course. I've been eating up plenty of highlights, as I'm sure like everybody's been doing, because it's like I gotta watch it through like a Laker lens now, because before it definitely was not an objective lens watching Montrezl Harrell. It was through a Clipper hater lens. So it's like I can really, really appreciate everything he did without like getting pissed as he was doing it. His ball handling skills are phenomenal for a freaking big. Like you said, yeah. I love the Julius Larry kind of comp, because it's everything that Julius wanted to be in terms of like breaking guys off the dribble, but just didn't really work out, you know. Trez has a really tight handle, and when he gets mismatched against plotting bigs, you know, which is going to happen, his ability to just drive past them right at the point of attack.
He moves fast. Those rip throughs, like boom, boom.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. He's got those like fast twitch muscles going for sure.
Always faces up like Randle, but does not take that hesitant, you know, like jab that Randle used to do. He just went. He just goes.
Very, very decisive. And you just feel comfortable watching him. You know, you're not at all like, oh God, here we go. So I think what I'm looking forward to is just, okay, so we could throw it down to Anthony Davis, right? And like clear it out, let him go to work. Obviously, Bron is that guy. Well, guess what? Now Trez is that guy too, which is freaking crazy. So, it's surreal, dude. It's awesome.
It is. Yeah. I want to say one more thing about Trez is like, because, you know, the Randle comp, I think, is a fair one in some ways. But for a guy who plays, it's almost like when you see highlights of him, your initial reaction, it's kind of like watching Randle highlights. You're like, oh, this guy must be OC like a lot. Let me just say that Montrezl Harrell, for how high his usage is, which this is something I saw in like a recent Pete tweet, his usage is like 25% or some crazy. It's like pretty high.
Yeah.
He's not just catching on the roll and dunking or catching lobs and dunking. He's doing a lot of stuff himself. This fool averaged one half 0.5 more turnovers per game than Dwight did last year, and playing 10 more minutes per game and doing a lot more offensively per game. Like,
totally.
He's very, very, very skilled. It's not just he's a wrecking ball who's going to run everybody over and he gets a lot of charges and, you know, all this. If anything, I was saying, like, I think his defense is going to surprise a lot of people. He was second in the NBA last year in charges drawn, which is crazy for somebody his size, right? And he had 2.5 times more charges drawn than Anthony Davis had, who was the highest on our team. So it just like when you look at everything with this guy, I think it's so easy to fall into the trap of looking at how he looked in the bubble and be like, what exactly did we get? But he averaged 17 points a game two seasons ago. He averaged almost 19 points a game last season off the bench. Last year against the Warriors, he averaged 18 plus points a game and shot 73% from the field in that playoff series where they took the Warriors to 6 against their elite defense. He had one bad series. You know, Jonathan alluded to it. His grandma died. His grandma like raised him. They were very, very close. He didn't come into the bubble until like 2 days, you know, less than a week before the first round started, and then he had to quarantine, and then he was kind of getting thrown in there with spot minutes and never really got his rhythm. Don't want to make too many excuses because he just didn't look good, but I am going to say that was an anomaly, right? And I'm going to say that when he is paired up with these other guys who, you know, when he was with the Clippers, you know, yeah, he played a lot of his minutes at the center. He's going to play a lot of his minutes at the center with this team as well, but we have other guys who, when he was playing with the Clippers, his perimeter defense was like Lou Williams. You know what I mean? Patrick Beverley's already on the bench. Like, he's playing with like Lou Williams and whoever their backup other guard was. And, you know, not so many minutes with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard where, you know, those guys are covering for his deficiencies. And guess what? The Clippers were the number six seed, number six team in defensive efficiency last year with Montrezl playing damn near 30 minutes a game at center for them. He obviously is able to do some stuff. And I think Vogel's scheme, the fact that we're going to have defensive guards on the floor with him and defensive wings with Kuzma and other height with Markieff to, you know, cover up some of the Markieff was playing small ball center for us last year, right? So when we have all those guys on the floor with Montrez, I think it's going to bring out the best in him. I'm just so lit on the signing, dude.
Yeah,
this
look.
Is like...
No, I have more to add because, you know, obviously he won Sixth Man of the Year. He also won the 2019-2020 Hustle Award, and a guy who hustles like that and is rabid is the perfect fit for this Lakers team, which at its most optimal level is whizzing to and fro. You know, they're covering so much ground laterally, up and down, in transition, etc. But on top of that, you know, if there was one weakness of Trez's that, you know, just looking at the box score superficially that I could see was just like, yo, why does this dude not get any rebounds? You know, I'm like, how come everything is just like 6 rebounds for a guy this big? And looking at his like hustle stat awards, through March 11, he ranked at or near the top of numerous hustle categories, including defensive box outs, which makes a whole ton of sense now. You know, he was first in defensive box outs. Charges drawn, he was first. All box outs, any box outs, offensively included, he was fourth. Contested shots, 11th, and Harrell ranked 28th in screen assists and 31st in offensive boxouts as well. So you put that on the Lakers team with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and it's over. I mean, maybe it's not over, but, you know, we're getting to that point. But yes, we'll get into more Trez as we move along, but I want to end this episode with a very poetic signing, you know, in Marc Gasol. A return home of sorts for number 52nd pick, number 48th pick. I forget what pick Marc Gasol was. I think 52nd, right? Or 58. I should have looked this up. I'm sorry, guys.
But 100th pick.
One of those.
Yeah. A return home of sorts for Marc Gasol as he finally gets to don the jersey of the team that first drafted him and then traded him away in exchange for his brother, Pau. He now gets to live in L.A. with Pau as well. Some cool tidbits. Marc Gasol gets reunited with Lionel Hollins, who they were both with the Memphis Grizzlies. And then, you know, obviously Gasol unfortunately missed Danny Green, former Raptors championship mates. But I think Marc Gasol also reunites with Phil Handy. I think they may have been together for 1 year, because I think Phil Handy was looking after Siakam, and we may not have had him yet. I may be mistaken in that respect. But regardless, I think with Marc Gasol coming in, I think he was so sorely needed on this team, especially with the absence of Dwight. Obviously, we lose verticality, and he's more of a ground-bound sort of player, and we lose some athleticism, but we gain such a more intelligent ground-bound game from a defensive and offensive perspective, especially when it comes to playmaking and stretching the floor. So, Alan, what are your thoughts on Marc Gasol? It's been a long time since we've had a Gasol in a Lakers jersey, but what a way to bring things back full circle, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we all know what he does, like, on the floor, and we know the type of player he's evolved into. The first things that come to mind are basketball IQ, right? And if you were to make a list of the top basketball IQ savant, super genius dudes in the league, I mean, you got Rondo, obviously, but mm-hmm. I feel like Marc Gasol is right up there. And the fact mm-hmm. that we have a guy with so much wisdom, right, who he can bring that to any team, be a coach on the floor type of guy, on the bench, in the locker rooms, just to have, again, that breadth of knowledge, I think is so, so important for this team. And I can't wait to see him chugging champagne in a parade. That's like the other thing that comes to mind is him just absolutely plaster drunk after Toronto won the championship on those double-decker buses. But, you know, his passing game as well is something that is going to be so freaking fun to watch. I mean, with all the versatility that we have on this team, all the weapons, and he can just be feasting, you know, with his court vision at the top of the key. The fact that he could be a playmaker in that type of way. He's like a pass first type of center. You know, I don't know how many times I've seen him at the 3-point line pretty much wide open, but he's still looking everywhere else. And because he's such a threat, defenders are just left in no man's land all around, and he could drain that three. So yeah, it's super sweet to get him. And it's that weird Lakers exceptionalism in a way where it's like, I feel like this just has to happen. Like Marc Gasol has to become a Laker at some point, because, you know, we drafted him in the trade and all that stuff. He'll probably end up back here because that's the way the universe is supposed to go. So yeah, those are the things that I'm excited for with Marc.
So the Lakers drafted him with the 48th overall pick. So I had it right the first time. I just second-guessed myself. I mean, you mentioned the like basketball savantness of things and how that resembles Rajon Rondo. And that's important because Rondo is not on this team anymore. So Marc Gasol can sort of fill that aspect of things. But I think taking it a step further is he not only sees the game on a genius spectrum, but he also plays it that way, plays it the right way, as opposed to Rondo, where Rondo can kind of get haywire at times, where Marc Gasol on the other end, he'll get perturbed if things aren't running smoothly and guys don't have their fundamentals and basics together while he's out there on the court, because he's usually the guy who sets the tone for those other players, you know, where Rondo, it can be OC and you're not sure what his mindset is at any one moment because he wants to make the flashy pass. Marc Gasol will always make the right read, and we've seen from history's past, or Lakers' history past, with Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum, that high-low game, it's going to be that exact same thing but amped up with Marc Gasol and Anthony Davis. And the way that he runs to the baseline in transition to clear the lanes for anybody who's running, this guy knows his game. He knows he doesn't need to run the floor and like dunk it. Let me just space it for everybody else and run to the baselines and hit this open three. He's obviously going to have great chemistry with Caruso because they're both such intuitive, no-frills sorts of players. And I think he's going to bring Kyle Kuzma to life, because Kyle Kuzma running off of Marc Gasol is giving me goosebumps. I think Mark will love playing with a guy like Kuzma who's just moving all the time. I mean, at times this season, Kuzma ran futilely, you know, because no one got him the ball. I'm like, that sucks, dude. But you can bet Mark's going to find him. And look, I know he looked washed in the playoffs. He only averaged like 6 points, 4 rebounds, 2.6 assists on bad percentages. But he'll be on a much more balanced team that will require him to do much less and allow him to focus on his main strengths. And even with that and losing Kawhi Leonard, in the regular season, he still averaged 7.5 points, 6.3 rebounds, 3.3 assists, shooting 38% from three on hitting 1.3 a game in 26 minutes. Pretty much comparable to Dwight Howard, right? But with Mark, you gain so much more offensive versatility and spacing and don't really lose out on the defensive end. It's just a different look defensively. So, Tommy, really quickly, 2 minutes on Marc Gasol.
Yeah, so I think for Mark, we're looking for Dwight Howard style defensive impact, but like honestly on a JaVale McGee budget in terms of timeline, like timing that he's going to play per game, JaVale, you know, Mark played 24 minutes a game last season for the Raptors. That's a lot of minutes. And not only, if you watch his highlights, not only was he playing 26 minutes a game, he was a focal point of like what they're trying to do. That was not a very offensively gifted team. You know, we're talking about Pascal Siakam, who has a questionable jump shot. I mean, but he's at least an all-star. But after him, it's a steep drop. You have Kyle Lowry getting up there in age, not the most, you know, explosive offensive player. Fred VanVleet, not the most explosive offensive player. Like a bunch of these middling type of guys, and they actually relied on Mark to do a lot and maybe play outside of his comfort zone. Mark on this team needs to play like 16 to 20 minutes a game. We signed Montrezl Harrell to play him, and he's going to play a lot. He played 28 minutes a game last year for the Clippers. He might not play quite as much, but he'll be in that ballpark this year with this team. When you couple that with Mark, you're thinking like 15, 16, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20, whatever it is, it's going to be a significant minutes drop for Mark, and I think that's going to keep him a little more fresh. And then of course you fill in the extra minutes with some 80 at the five, which we did last year. So Mark brings, you know, the Dwight toughness and just pure brute physical stature that we kind of lose from getting rid of Dwight, but he brings a whole new dynamic offensively. And you know, beyond the stretching the floor, which everybody knows, he's a big man who can make free throws. He doesn't get to the line very often, but he can make the free throws. He is an amazing passer, and I want to say, like, not just at the high post. He is the only guy we have, and we didn't have anyone like this last year at all, but when you run a screen with Marc Gasol and he slips and you pass it to him as the roll man, he has the ability to stop in space and either take the little mid-range jumper or create a pass for somebody else. We did not have that flexibility with either JaVale or Dwight last year. It had to be a lob for JaVale, and it had to be a pass to Dwight close enough to where he could just catch it and go up and finish it. And often it led to like wild layups if this floor spacing wasn't correct or, you know, whatever. But Mark can do so many. He can catch it. He can finish it at the rim. He can catch it and stop in space and take a short jumper. He could catch it, not do anything, and just make a pass to a cutter. I think that's where, you know, to your point with Kuzma, I think that's where they're going to really click together. It really works. You worry about his durability, being able to, you know, sustain himself for a season. But, you know, if they are able to get over that hurdle, it just adds a completely new dynamic. And I mean, we were praying for a center like this to come start for us all last year, and we finally got one.
Yeah, so he's not going to be as exciting as like a JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard alley-oop dunk. But the exciting part is going to be whoever gets his pass on the opposite end. You know, whoever he is passing to.
Just imagine the the pick and roll with Mark and LeBron. First of all, these two huge behemoths, okay, coming at you. And like, the defender is going to totally lose LeBron behind Mark. And then LeBron's going to pass it to, you know, bounce pass to Mark. And Mark is going to throw a lob to AD. Like, it's going to be automatic.
Well, if you remember when we had Lamar Bynum and Powell, they used to run pick and roll with each other as big men. They were setting screens for each other and rolling because each Loved one it. Of them could sort of pass and finish, and that's kind of what it's going to be like.
What's AD Mark pick and roll, dude? It's going to be so
crazy. No, they're going to do that, you know? And you know, for Marc Gasol, I love these comps, by the way. For me, at this stage of his career, he's like a later version of Brad Miller, but still with fundamentally sound defense, right? And yeah, it's going to be crazy. I have another comp for Trez, but it's like an old school comp. Antonio McDice, if anybody remembers how powerful McDice was. Didn't really have a jump shot, took it to the rim. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Actually, we need to talk about Trez Tinkle. 6'7", good size, can shoot from the outside, not as efficiently as you'd hope, but he gets it up, can pass the ball, play make well. Luke Kennard, Joe Ingles, worst case, a shorter Ryan Kelly. Those are my thoughts on Trey Trinkle. What about you, Alan? Trey.
I'll take Joe Ingles, mate. Put some shrimp on the body.
There you go. All right, we'll leave it there. We'll have a second episode where we talk about the Lakers team more holistically and what we think this, how we feel about the new identity that they're constructing here. But with that said, we'll leave it there. Please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod, and please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. Guys, it is lit and pop, pop.
Pop, pop.
Tommy, give me your best pop, pop.
Pop, pop.
I don't know if that's probably trademarked, but you know what? I'll catch you guys later.
Peace.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.